Today, hey central bankers, is inflation dead or just sleeping? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to my latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I want to go further down the rabbit hole than I ever have before. The role of central bankers and inflation targeting. And before I start, a quick alert. After a number of requests, I have now established a Bitcoin account to receive donations to allow viewers to help to support our efforts. The QR code is now on screen. This is in addition to our PayPal and Patreon alternatives, the links are below. We really appreciate those who continue to help us to make great content. Every dollar goes directly towards making more shows. One of the strange issues we see in many countries now is an inflation rate which appears to be lower than it should be. Lower because, as we've discussed before, the way the consumer price index is calculated has changed over the years to exclude home ownership by using a rental proxy, and the adjusted cost base for added value, whereby the costs of a new computer, say, will be decreased by the additional value provided by the later model. But setting to one side the thought that the CPI is and continues to report a lower rate than real household experience, see our post, is the CPI a lie? There is another question to consider. That is inflation targeting and the role of central banks. The logic goes like this. Central banks should be targeting a Goldilocks rate of between 2 and 3% each year. The Federal Reserve joined the club in 2012, and central banks in New Zealand, Australia, the UK, and elsewhere are all following the same path. In practice, economists think that a modest amount of inflation is beneficial, and a 2 to 3% target provides some useful flexibility. Central bankers are heavily influenced by a dictum from Milton Friedman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, who said that inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. After the breakdown of the Bretton Woods system of fixed exchange rates in the early 1970s and the inflation that followed, many central banks adopted Friedman's worldview and made price stability their central preoccupation. That led to the proliferation of a system known as inflation targeting, explicitly aiming to keep prices going up by a small amount each year. So, if the inflation rate is low, central banks should cut rates to pump more money into the economy to stimulate inflation. And the reverse is also true. If inflation is running too hot, then they should lift rates to slow the economy with the view of keeping things in that Goldilocks zone. And central banks move beyond interest rates to quantitative easing after the financial crisis of 2008. This is essentially pushing more money created from thin air into the economy. The US Fed, for example, unleashed a program of bond buying in 2008. It was followed by similar moves at the Bank of England, the ECB, and the Bank of Japan. Altogether, more than $12 trillion was pumped into the financial system with the goal of making credit cheaper for everything from mortgages to auto loans. This makes the central bank's balance sheet larger and larger. When this did not work, some central banks did something previously unthinkable. They pushed interest rates below zero, hoping that charging banks to hold onto their money would pressure them to get credit flowing again. US officials discussed negative rates but decided against them. The European Central Bank is assessing whether the policy worked as intended. But despite this, central banks have failed to hit the 2% inflation target everywhere. And now officials in Europe and Japan have been concerned with the threat of actual deflation. Falling prices might sound good for consumers, but central bankers fear them because they believe inflation-adjusted or real interest rates are what matters most for economic activity. That means when prices go down and nominal rates stay the same, real prices have gone up, making monetary policy tighter. In the US, even after a decade of economic expansion and despite the lowest unemployment rate in 49 years, two factors that generally fuel wage and price increases, inflationary pressures remain too weak for comfort. So now, go back a few months when the Fed was trying to reverse QE to bring rates to more normal levels. In fact, the Fed stopped bond buying in 2014, and in 2017 it began what was called quantitative tightening by allowing its portfolio to gradually shrink. The ECB's program ended in December, though it is maintaining the size of its holdings by reinvesting payments from maturing securities, and the Bank of Japan is still buying bonds, though it has tapered its purchases. But markets fell in late 2018 when it looked like a global economic slowdown or maybe even a recession might take hold, even with interest rates at low levels. So in January, the Fed changed tune, the so-called pivot. Plans to lift rates were shelved, and in many other countries, plans to begin lifting rates from crisis-era levels was put aside before they could even kick off, while Europe and Japan kept negative interest rates in place. So inflation continues to track below their targets. All this leads to some important questions. First, while all these low interest rates and QE may have lifted asset prices from stocks to property, and perhaps it kept the economy from falling over after the financial crisis, although some would say just postponing the inevitable, it has not led to more robust growth and faster inflation. So why is this? Frankly, no one really knows why inflation has failed to return. Some point to globalization, which has brought millions of low-wage workers into the labour markets, the digitalisation of the economy, plus market concentration and the decline of labour, both of which undermine the power of workers to demand higher wages. Some worry central banks will keep interest rates too low for too long and fuel bubbles in financial markets. And this is one reason, of course, why home prices are so high. Others think central banks are being too timid and should be cutting rates harder to boost growth enough to produce the wage gains that are inflation's fuel. And this appears to be the RBA's approach now, and many economists locally are on this track. Many central banks, including the RBA, are holding up for rising wage growth, but forecasts of higher wages consistently undershoot. There is a growing suspicion inflation is lower than it used to be, for reasons that are frankly unclear. And a downward drift could mean a greater risk that when a central bank eases on the brakes by raising interest rates, as the Fed did 9 times since 2015, the impact might be bigger than it intends. That could mean slowing growth unnecessarily or even risking recession. The question becomes, what is the neutral interest rate, the one that neither speeds up nor slows the economy? It's a theoretical rate, but it's what central banks have in mind when they gauge how fast to let an economy run. They worry setting interest rates too low could set an inflationary spiral in motion too high and the economy slows. They need to avoid so-called Japanification. Interest rates there have been near zero or below since the 1990s, when the bursting of a property bubble left decades of sluggish economic growth in its wake. Japan's central banks have taken quantitative easing further than anyone else, but inflation there is still running below 1%. It's a fail. So now central bankers are starting to question their current approach. Do they have the right tools in the toolbox, and are they using them right? They tend to look beyond inflation to an extent, for example, the labour market. Indeed, the RBA recently said that they will be looking through weak inflation to the labour market when they considered interest rate policy. More about that, I suspect, tomorrow. And if the interest rate lever is broken, perhaps greater spending is the answer. Modern monetary theory is being embraced by some as a solution, and we discussed this in our post, The Merits of MMT. It boils down to the appealing argument that when inflation is in check, we can step up spending without worrying about budget deficits, because central banks can always create more money to pay debts. Such money could be invested in things like a minimum wage, infrastructure investment, and other big ticket items. And they say a government deficit is not a problem, not a problem at all. But others are concerned that such policies, which are gaining ground in the democratic side of US politics, could ignite runaway inflation or debase the US dollar. Then there is, of course, the really big question. Are central banks fit for purpose? Central bankers in most of the world enjoy a privileged status as the primary managers of the business cycle, and in most cases even have formal independence within the government bureaucracy. That's based in part on widespread acceptance of the idea that central banks should be shielded from the pressures of day-to-day politics so that they can take a longer view and make unpopular decisions if needed. But the difficulties central banks are encountering in stabilizing the economy has led more of them to conclude that fiscal policies such as changes in taxation and government spending should take on a larger role, as was the case before the 1970s. Central bankers are also all drinking the same Kool-Aid, following the same paths, under the orchestrated baton of the Bank for International Settlements and supported by bodies such as the FSB, the Financial Stability Board. In fact, it appears to me that central bankers have become more concerned about their own survival than on the impact of real people in the real economy. As we discussed in our post, when the music stops, who's going to be left holding the baby? The powers that be seem to have forgotten the economy is for people, not for bankers. As a result, we see a tendency to privatise profits and socialise the risks via bail-in or bail-out. The bottom line is this: central bankers are failing us. Perhaps inflation targeting is part of the problem, not the solution. In which case, the current toolbox and supervisory structures are simply not fit for purpose. Perhaps it's time for a new broom. Except, all the brushes are kept firmly locked in the central banker's broom cupboard. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.